This is CliffCentral.com.
Well, good morning, folks. It's another fortnightly episode of Auto Central. And we have a full studio here this morning. Welcome, everybody. I hope you...
What's up, George?
Hello, George.
I hope you had a good weekend. George. How's it? And we have a guest from Mesa Frankfurt, Dennis Klopper. Did I say your surname?
Perfect, Klopper. 100%.
Because in Afrikaans it would be Klopper, right?
That's right, English, yeah. English Klopper.
English Klopper. Okay, great stuff. Well, welcome, Dennis. We're glad to have you here, and we're gonna get into it with Dennis a little bit later on. But for the moment, I think the standard operating procedure is news talk. What's in the news today? And the first story is the South African Post Office is now accepting bank card payments for car licenses.
Finally.
Well, yeah, it was a bit frustrating. I went to get my license for my car in June, rolled into the post office with my papers, and stood in the queue for half an hour. And when I got to the window, the guy took one look at me, took a look at the papers in my hand, and went, cash only. Now you got to run, find an ATM, get the money, draw money.
Go back to the back of the line again.
And go stand back in the line again. And nobody really walks around with R1,000 of cash on them anymore. So...
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, car licenses are getting more and more expensive. So I suppose, you know, that kind of cash, you could just get followed because you get these criminals nowadays that follow you from the ATM. Yeah, we had it in our estate the other day. Some lady drew money from an ATM and well, not in our estate, on the one next door, sorry. And somebody followed her to the estate entrance and pulled out guns, had balaclavas on at their state entrance. So, you know, it's a good thing, I think.
Yeah, because I also read here that it's actually been the post office's biggest revenue bringer. So
what, cash?
Well, the renewal of car licenses. So it kind of makes sense that finally, you know, they're going to accommodate for people who want to just, you know, renew their license.
Well, I suppose when you've got a hold on the actual product, licenses.
Yeah.
You can dictate the payment terms.
Especially if it's cash only.
Yeah, you can dictate the payment terms because without you paying your license, you can't drive your car. And so they can dictate the payment terms. But good on you, post office. It's about bloody time. Next in the news is that there's been reports of a worrying trend. Local car sales continue to drop, yet we're still exporting thousands of vehicles each month. I wonder why this is a worrying trend. You know, my opinion is that there is a global economic crisis coming. And the world's going to, I don't want to be doom and gloom because I'm not, but the world's going to explode at some point. There has to be a recession at some point. Is it as much of a worrying trend that we're exporting vehicles when the South African vehicle sales in new car are declining, and I'll tell you why in a second. But if we're exporting, that means we're getting hard currency into the country. That's
exactly
a good thing, not a bad thing, in my opinion. So the more exports we do, the better it is for South Africa, right?
Correct.
I agree.
You know,
it's very good for the local manufacturers, those cars actually export.
Yes.
It's not so good for the importers, though.
Yeah, it's not so good for the importers, but those are swings and roundabouts.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, the local economy is taking strain when it comes to new car, and you know, the domestic sales at 46,077 units reflected a decline of 1,779 units, or 3.7% from 47,000 vehicles sold in July last year. Now, this is nothing new. This has been happening all year. So I'm not saying it's a good thing, it's a bad thing, but it's the science of the economic pressures and the times. And and what we're finding at Auto Trader is that used vehicle sales are pretty buoyant, and people are shifting to used. And let's be honest, the used car market dwarfs the new car market by about two times. So it's not, you know, I always say the new car trend in sales is not necessarily reflective of the consumer, because the consumer has to drive a car in this country. The infrastructure is just not there, right?
Yeah, that's true.
But I mean, this is global. It's not only South Africa that's experiencing the decline in sales. It's everywhere. China, America,
India,
Europe, India, everybody. Nobody's buying new cars. They're saving their money and holding back because they're just waiting for that global rug to be pulled out from underneath.
Well, I mean, even the experts at Ford and General Motors have now pulled back on production, reduced inventory, because they anticipate a further drop in new car sales. They don't want to be stuck with a whole fleet of cars that they can't sell.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I think that trend also continues to manufacturers bringing in new models. We saw with the X-Class, which you mentioned last week. You know, that we're not sure if it's going to be around.
No, that being said, this year there has been half as many new car launches as there were last year.
Yeah. I mean,
we're just not seeing the introduction of new vehicles at the rate that we did in the last few years.
Scary stuff.
It's is it, Wandile?
I think it is. I think it's... If this is happening to vehicles, it must be happening everywhere.
Well, I mean, I think it's a worldwide global thing.
Yeah.
You know, everybody is under pressure, but the consumer is still buying.
Yeah.
It just means that the consumer's not buying brand new cars. Now, that does show economic pressure in my mind. It's not like we're shooting the lights out, but if you think about it, people downgrade. They tighten their belts, they spend less, but they still have to spend because the population still has to survive.
Yeah.
People still have to do things. So the world's not imploding.
They're still spending.
Yes. They're still spending. Mm. They're just spending on things that maybe we don't like. You know, maybe it's uncomfortable. Maybe those are the reasons that you know, people get themselves into this negative territory. But you know, I'm hoping that the new car sales recover and get into positive territory. But at the end of the day, the consumer will decide with their wallet. And at the moment, I think everybody's tightening their belts and waiting to see, you know, what happens. And maybe there's a global economic crisis coming at some point in the future. What do you think?
Price, I think, plays a huge role once again in this. Like, I bought my car secondhand because it just made sense. I knocked off almost 100,000 off, you know, what I would have paid for if it was new.
Yeah.
It also kind of just makes sense to go used over new.
And in the news, you read a lot about ride sharing. And we've got you know, Lyft services and ride hailing services, and maybe consumers are also just waiting to see the advent of that. Maybe you know that is another kind of little drop in the ocean that says, hold on, let's just hold on and see what's going on here. But all in all, I don't look at the world in a negative way. I look at the world in a positive way. And for me, the consumers are still spending.
Still moving 40,000 units a month.
Exactly. That's the positive side. And we're still exporting, which means we're getting hard currency into the country. That's the positive side. On other news, big trends that are likely to disrupt the motoring industry in South Africa. Now, one of those trends is electric cars. And what do you think the other trends are?
Let's take a guess. You just mentioned it now. I think... the new ride sharing and new sort of businesses sort of
could Lyft and Uber you know, disrupt the motoring industry in South Africa to the degree that that totally turns it on its head.
Not yet.
No, not yet.
Wow. But gradually, I think that ride sharing as a whole will change the ownership model of cars as we've grown to know it.
Yeah.
Ride sharing and autonomous vehicles when they eventually arrive.
It's kind of like when rental companies started filtering in. You know, they became some of the biggest purchasers of vehicles in the country. You know, I think it's going to be the same thing.
Yeah.
Maybe it won't be consumers who are buying the vehicles, but it's going to be these new companies.
Exactly.
Corporate sort of initiative.
If you're honest about this, we pay for our cars. Costs a couple of thousand rands a month. You spend an hour and a half in it in the morning and an hour and a half in it in the afternoon, and for the rest of the time it's just standing there, literally costing you money.
It's true.
Yeah.
That's true. And I think that business model is being superseded by ride sharing.
Well, not yet. I mean, the volumes aren't there yet. No, but could it happen in the future?
Yeah.
How long out? You know, in South Africa, I just don't see it all happening in the next 5 years. It's just we don't have the infrastructure. We don't have the I think the inputs in order to get it right yet. And we heard from Grid Cars last time, and the participation or adoption curve that in South Africa oftentimes becomes incredibly steep because we wait too long, and then suddenly Europe and America puts pressure on us, and when these electric cars are forced on us, it's gonna take its spike. But I'm finding personally that the ride hailing services, I'm not going to mention their names, but I'm finding the ride hailing services cars deteriorating. I don't know if you found the same thing. I'm finding the cars deteriorating, the quality of the car deteriorating, particularly in Cape Town.
Yeah.
When I go to Cape Town, I don't want to use it anymore because I feel unsafe.
Rust buckets.
Yeah, you know, the quality standard. So that's got to have an impact on the transition of the public as well.
Also, I think it's a generational thing. I mean, when I grew up, my parents told me not to make appointments with strangers over the internet.
Or not to get into a strange car.
Now you have an app that allows you to get into a stranger's car and you can order it over the internet.
Yeah. Pesky millennials. Yeah.
Other particular trends, like you mentioned, autonomous vehicles, and then South African business model changes. Now, as far as my opinion goes, my personal opinion goes, is I don't think car dealerships are going anywhere.
No.
You know, I just don't think car dealerships will ever go anywhere. And the reason I don't think car dealerships will go anywhere is because the used car market dwarfs the new car market by more than 2 times. Okay, and in my mind, used cars are very much not a commodity to the degree that a new car is. So therefore, what are going to be the outlets for these second-hand cars? Because from our business point of view, e-commerce for cars, click and buy, the likes of Carvana, haven't been scaled internationally. And so I think retail outlets like car dealerships are going nowhere in the future. Not for the foreseeable future. Yeah. Definitely not in the next 5 to 8 to maybe even 10 years.
10 years,
yeah. I mean, I don't know what you guys think about whether all of this disruption, autonomous vehicles, electric vehicles, are going to disrupt the dealership market. You know, what about OEMs going direct to the public?
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I think what's going to change it is how they sort of interacting with the audience and consumers.
Who is interacting?
The dealerships. I think that's going to change quite a bit.
It's going to become less about the product and more about the experience.
Yeah. I mean, Bobby Pickoff was here, and he was saying the exact same thing, that because he's refined the experience and made it so geared towards giving the person who's purchasing the vehicle ease, he's, you know, been able to dramatically increase his sales.
See, and especially as far as the more premium products go, I mean, let's be honest, there's very little difference between a Merc AMG GT, for instance, and a top spec Aston Martin or a high spec Aston Martin. Fundamentally, they're very much the same thing, and they do the same kind of jobs. Yes, they style differently and different trimmings and so on, but they do the same kind of thing. So which dealership would that buyer, someone who's in a position to actually buy one of those, which one would he prefer? The one that gives him the best experience.
Yeah.
Makes him feel important. I mean, if you can spend 2.5 million rand on a car or 5 million rand on a car, you want to be treated like an absolute king.
Well, you know what? That speaks to, and I mean, we're in the news segment, so I better not get into theory, but I've always said, from a business point of view, technology becomes a commodity. Technology absolutely becomes a commodity. Technology is copyable, all of that stuff. What is left at the end of the day? Your emotional attachment and experience to something. That's what counts.
Yep.
So therefore, you know, I always say sales and marketing are never going to disappear because of that, because of the human emotional element. But in saying that, that speaks directly into why, another reason why car dealerships by and large will not go away. You need that fulfillment experience. Mm-hmm. Why would you buy a 300,000 rand car off the internet right now? I don't think there's enough technology. I don't think there's enough understanding of the journey. I don't think there's enough integration in the market in order to fulfill a transaction online. Mm. You know, some companies like Carvana have got it right, but it's still not scaled.
Nope.
You know, and as far as as far as the market goes, you know, besides electric cars, Martin, I think
you probably heard that eye roll.
Anyway, that's a passionate topic. But another interesting topic is the future of connectivity and what your car knows about you. Yeah. Your car apparently in the future, I haven't seen any cars with this technology yet, will know how much you weigh.
Yeah, I think this for me is the most exciting or the most or the biggest trend I think that's going to like impact the industry, because the more I go into newer and newer vehicles, the more they want things from me in terms of my, you know, connecting to my phone.
Yeah. And is that a problem for you?
No, because it makes my drive better, to be honest.
So I mean, to touch on that privacy point for a second, I mean, I'm all for privacy. I'm not against privacy. Privacy is an important thing, and people mustn't abuse people's private information. That's an absolute no-go area. But we are giving our privacy away every day of our lives. In order to live in the 21st century, you have to, unfortunately, give up some privacy. And that's what's happening in these cars, is the cars are collecting data, how much you weigh, where you go, they know where you live, they know who you phoned, they know who you've texted. Mm. And all of that data is worth something.
Yeah.
So are car companies becoming data businesses in the future?
I think are all businesses becoming data businesses?
Yeah, fair point.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're all becoming data businesses in order to sell their product. And similarly with car companies.
I told my wife the car was sentient. She laughed, I laughed, the car laughed.
it just crosses the line. You know, I was reading somewhere that, you know, they will even know how many kids you have. If they're inside the car at the time, which is sweet.
Amazon just recently admitted that that Alexa is listening to conversations, and I had a conversation with somebody about this in the office. I mean, I've got several Alexas in my house just because I like the technology, and she's constantly listening for the wake word, which is Alexa. And if she's constantly listening for the wake word, she's constantly listening
to everything.
To everything.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you shout at the dog, she knows. When the dog barks, she knows. So therefore, what's Amazon going to do in the future?
Well, I mean, Facebook is doing it already.
Yes. Well, Facebook admitted to it, I think.
They admitted to it last week. And I have proof of this because I was talking, we were discussing, not Googling or anything, just discussing a harness for my dog. Which was at that stage still a puppy. And
did
at
you
what
see
stage?
Ads?
And at what stage would I want to buy a harness for this little dog? And what size would I need? And within the next 2 days, my Facebook feed started being flooded with adverts
harnesses.
For dog harnesses.
I've got to look at my feed and see. it's scary stuff. But very lastly in the news, apparently on a Tesla Model S, detected a meteor. Apparently, autopilot managed to detect something that was about to happen with a Tesla Model X and asked McLeod, the driver, I'm taking it, to take over the steering wheel. When he did so, he saw a meteor crashing nearby. McLeod even asks if this sort of thing happened to any of his followers. One of them says it did, but we're not sure of how serious he was.
Yeah, so there was no dash cam on this, so there's no proof.
There's no proof.
It's...
Do you think it's him just trying to get his 15 minutes?
I think it's real. I think it's real in the sense that it spotted a danger. I'm not sure if it knew, okay, it's a meteor. I think it just knew something
out of the ordinary.
Yeah. In this route, and it was like, hey, please.
Well, I had a similar experience actually on the road with the Volvo. where this car, we were cruising along, and I was using the Volvo Pilot Assist because we were pottering along at 45 k's an hour in streaming rain. And the next moment, this car slammed on the brakes and swerved into a gap next to me, and I couldn't figure out why it did this, only to see a little 1400 bucky come spinning past in front of me.
Holy
cow. Oh, wow.
So this car predicted this accident. It saw it happening from two lanes away. It predicted that this thing's going to hit
Volvo,
and it
right?
took Volvo, and it took evasive action before I even knew it was going on.
You know what? I don't think people realize how much technology is in that Volvo.
Yeah.
That Volvo is unbelievable.
It's scary.
It's,
I mean, it's
S60,
really
S90.
S90. Okay. V90, cross-country, the station wagon one.
Okay.
And it's quite scary when you realize that this car is more aware of its surroundings than you are.
You realize.
Yeah.
Which means it's constantly collecting data.
Yep.
Nonetheless, we could talk about the news for the entire day, but it is time for our auto talk segment with who's doing it this morning, Martin.
That would be me.
And then we're talking about the BMW 850 Cabriolet.
Yes, to give it its full name, the BMW M850i X-Drive Convertible.
What a machine!
I've been excited about this car.
I drove it on launch.
Yeah.
Bombed around Cape Town for an entire day.
Dude, that car is unbelievable.
Well, let me tell you. I mean, I used to have the older 650 V8. Right. Is this a V8?
Yeah, this is a V8 as well. Yeah.
I used to have the old 650 V8, and I loved that car.
So take that car and turn everything up to 12.
Whoa.
And add past 11.
And add all-wheel drive, so you can actually use all that power as well.
Wow.
Now, this is not the full-fat M8. Mm. There's still a higher-performance one coming along. It's been launched overseas already, so it will arrive in South Africa shortly as well. But maybe. I frankly don't see the point, because this thing is faster than you can actually unleash on public
roads. It's faster than you can think. Let's put it that way.
It's not faster than a Tesla Model S.
It will actually give it a good run.
0 to 100?
3.9.
Oh, yeah, but when the Model S runs out of battery from running at ludicrous speed.
When did you cross the fence?
Thank you,
Have
Lawrence,
you been spending time with Martin?
No, George. In certain instances, I will make exceptions. The M850 is it is. I think it's probably the best thing in BMW stable at the moment.
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt.
It is just the perfect storm of style, luxury, and
the
balls out.
And the versatility of the thing. I'm not talking about loading capacity or anything of that sort. I'm talking about you can literally press a button and it becomes this cushy cruiser.
Did you do the golf club test?
I do not play golf.
Because apparently people...
I do not own golf bats, but
I don't know this for a fact, but people that play golf have this golf club test that if a set of clubs fit into the back of the boots of a car, then the boot's fine.
Okay, my brother was out of town for that week, so I couldn't ask him for his set of bats.
The boot is actually pretty spacious.
Yes.
I'm not sure on the convertible, on the... coupe that I tested.
Yeah, it's about 380 litres, so there's plenty of space, and it's a wide car, so I reckon you'll be able to fit a couple of...
At least two bodies.
Yeah, at least two bodies. There we go. Because this car is Mafia AF.
Not only has he crossed the Rubicon to back to ICE vehicles, he's now talking like he's the Mafia.
He's giving tips.
But yes,
when you see this thing, George, you will understand why.
Not only that, look, it's gorgeous to look at, for starters, and especially in convertible
Well, now
format.
Every time I see one, I'm going to think of bodies in the boot.
Yeah, well, and when you drop the roof, it just gets... prettier and prettier and prettier. It's lovely inside as well. But on the one moment you will be cruising along and the suspension will be soft and compliant and the gearbox will keep the revs low and the exhaust will be quiet and it's a proper luxury car. Then you poke one button on the center console and it turns into an absolute demon.
Mm. Yeah.
It's
turbocharged?
Twin turbo V8 4.4. Now, here's the scary bit. It's quick up to 80 k's an hour because it does launch very well. But by that stage, the traction control and the four-wheel drive and everything has more or less sorted itself out, and then it really gets going. That car will collect speeding tickets on a scale second to none. Really? And it's just because it's so accessible, it's so easy to go incredibly fast.
I will freely admit, there were certain sections on the launch,
yes,
going around the back end of the mountains of in Cape Town,
yeah,
where we were into three digits, starting with a 2 and ending with an 85. It's stupidly fast.
It really is stupidly fast. And quite frankly, I don't understand the need for an M8 on top of this.
So I've actually seen I've seen drag races with the 850i and with the M.
Yeah.
And there's kind of a difference.
I know. I just don't really understand why
you
need
that difference. Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
But unfortunately, as with all good things and all great things,
it's expensive.
It comes with a serious price tag. Entry point for this one, for the convertible, is just over 2 million rand.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Well, that's why.
Well, I mean, for a car of that caliber, I mean, you're in the territory of, you know, Range Rover Sport, Porsche Cayenne,
price, yeah.
You know, you're in the right category in terms of spec and power under the bonnet, right?
Wow, absolutely.
But how will that depreciate versus the Porsche Cayenne?
That's another question entirely.
What planet did you come from?
I'm sorry.
This is a motor vehicle. They all depreciate.
It depreciates faster than it accelerates.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. So, I don't think it depreciates any faster than the average car, to be honest.
No, actually it does.
Why?
Because as soon as the motor plan runs out, it's about to become really expensive.
That's most expensive cars, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the more expensive and the fancier the car, the more it depreciates.
But what I'm saying is that there's nothing out of the ordinary about this 850 in the grand scheme of our economy and the worldwide economy, to be honest.
Oh, and there's one other catch.
You know what people think that cars live forever. They don't.
No, they
deteriorate.
And if you drive one of these things and you're not paying full attention, you're not going to live forever either.
So that makes the
I'm worried about you, Lauren. Yeah,
this makes the only other downside to this car a bit of a moot point, because BMW claims 10.6 litres per 100.
You buy a 2 million rand car and you worry about 10.6 litres per 100, there are problems.
You probably wouldn't complain about the real world 16 to 16 litres per 100.
We were averaging 28.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
But I had to make the fuel last the whole week. You had to make it last a day.
when that little stopper at the bottom of the accelerator is constantly touched,
you're not going to get anything.
I mean, I think my 650 used to do, if driven normally, once I'd got used to the power, driven normally, probably about 15.
Yeah.
That's what I used to get, around 15.
So that's about what I averaged with this one as well. But I was naughty on a couple of instances.
Naughty?
Yeah. Naughty, All in all, though, it is a magnificent machine. As far as I could see, it only has two competitors from pretty different backgrounds. The one is the Merc AMG S63 Cabrio, which is more expensive. And the other one with similar performance is a Porsche 911.
I'm just glad that they made it. It's a stupid car. It goes stupid speed.
It's
a Lamborghini, right?
It's actually utterly pointless, but I love the fact that it exists.
Yes, and I'm very thankful to BMW that as of late they've lost their minds a little and they've been making cars that are stupid and pointless, but we are so glad that they exist.
Now, this is a magnificent machine. So my launch, my road test will be live in an hour or so. And then you can go to autotrader.co.za for some pictures. I got some very nice photos as well. And you can read all about this, insanely expensive BMW.
So, thank you, Martin. Appreciate the review. Go on to autotrader.co.za and go and have a look at Martin's review if you want to go and have a look at a demon of a car, and one that the guys in the studio are drooling over.
It's one of the few test cars that I actually want.
I'm not yet drooling because it doesn't have a T on the front of its name, and it's not as fast.
I don't think you get a TMW.
But nonetheless, we are headed to the Festival of Motoring this week, and you can win a hot lap with Sara van der Merwe in a V12 Ferrari. Now, you should see this V12 Ferrari. If you want to compare classic beauty with modern beauty, the Ferrari beats the BMW 850 hands down. And I would encourage you, tick it off your bucket list if it is one of your bucket list items to head around Kyalami racetrack in a sports car or in a supercar, and you will have one of South Africa's best drives at breakneck speeds and with racing legend Cyril Funamava. I think that is something that is on a lot of people's bucket list. But nonetheless, in studio today, we have our guest. And welcome, Dennis Klopper, and from Mesa Frankfurt. And you guys are the parties responsible for the Festival of Motoring and responsible for the success of it. I'm not going to, unless you give me the permission, I'm not going to mention the show that you took over from, but you guys have been massively successful over the last couple of years, and I'm keen to find out why, what is the magic ingredient, and where the future lies.
I think, yes, obviously we took over the previous show, and I think the whole market for static car shows is a dying market, and I think in many ways we preempted this with Festival.
What do you mean by static car show?
A traditional car show, Frankfurt, Detroit, where people come, look at cars on floors, they take the wraps off them, they unveil them. Those days are gone. People see these cars long before they get covers get pulled off on social media platforms. So yes, I think the whole thing with it is it's an interactive show where people can touch, see, hear, smell, drive in the cars, and not just stare at them in a static environment. So this is the fourth year of the show. It's grown tremendously. It's become a bit of a hybrid between a car show and the Goodwood
Festival
type
of Motor.
Festival of Speed.
Yes, please. Okay.
And it really is appealing to people's passion for the automobile. I think that's what it's all about. And it's been a great success. I think we are sort of reinventing the show, the automotive show in the space.
Lovely. And you're one of the directors of Mesa Frankfurt that is responsible for putting this show on, the wrong word is developing, but for coming up with this different way of running a show, you know, crossover between Goodwood Festival of Speed and a traditional motor show, and putting it on a track.
Correct. I think it was initially an idea of the previous show owner, shall we call them, and in conjunction with Constantine, who was the CEO of Mesa Frankfurt South Africa, came up and developed the concept. I was at Kyalami at that time, and we obviously were quite keen to work with Mesa on the concept, and I think it's very exciting. You know, it's evolving, and I think the industry is evolving very rapidly, as we've been talking about. And we have to find what people want to see, and I think that's the key objective.
Yeah, I mean, we've been involved with the show now, I think, almost since inception.
Correct.
And as Auto Trader, we're excited because, we want to be involved with the biggest shows in the country, and this is the biggest automotive show in South Africa right now, right?
It is. It's the only show supported by NAAMSA and by the OEMs. And we're hoping to get over 60,000-70,000 people this year in the 4 days. So it is the biggest show, no question, in South Africa, probably in Africa.
So talking about those 60,000-70,000, I mean, typically, just to juxtapose 60,000 or 70,000 against something else, what makes 60,000 to 70,000 big?
I think in terms of automotive shows, I mean, if you look at motorsport in South Africa, obviously it's struggling. So in terms of traditional motor shows or motoring type events, it's a big number.
Yeah.
And I think it's really about passion. It's really about getting people's excitement. And the key thing is to appeal to all ages.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we have a lot of families that come to the show, and it's evolved into a family show.
Yeah.
And you'll see a lot of the OEMs focus their stands and their activations around family events and family activations.
Yeah.
And that's a good sign. It's a good sign that kids want to see cars and supercars. They play them on the games, and then they can come see them and maybe even get to ride in them.
I know. I've enjoyed the show every single time that we've been there. So what's different about this year? What did you learn from last year?
I think one of the things we wanted to do this year was to just try and keep it a little bit more of the same. The show has evolved quite rapidly from year one.
Don't break what's fixed.
Well, yes, I think we obviously improve content. It has been a challenge with the OEMs this year. The markets are tight and budgets are tight. So we've increased content to give people more excitement. But, you know, saying that about the OEMs, we've had a lot of new OEMs coming on board this year. Toyota's back.
Lovely.
The Supra is going to be one of the highlights of the show, I think. The 4x4 area is completely sold out. We've got 10 OEMs in the 4x4 space. And I think that's a reflection of the market at the moment. If you look at the sales, that's where, strangely, people are heading towards, away from the cars that work with a plug.
did you speak to Martin before the show?
George, you're in the minority here today.
It's got its own plug.
No, yeah, I think even from a consumer perspective, there's a lot to look forward to. There's this morning we were seeing that the e-tron's coming. It's things like that which, for anybody who's a car fan, you want to see these things. Mm-hmm. You know, where else are you going to see it in South Africa?
Except for there.
As well as the aftermarket.
Yeah, I think the other exciting electric car is the Volkswagen IDR that broke the Pikes Peak record is going to be at Kyle Long.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Is it going to be on the track?
Unfortunately not. No. Okay. It's going to be there for everyone to see, which is exciting. I think the whole thing with the automobile, it is evolving, and we have to acknowledge this. And I think the industry has also got to change maybe its focus in terms of sharing some of these new concepts and new ideas as to how things are going to be going forward. There is change, and I'd like to see more interaction with the public in terms of what is coming, and we'll get there. I think we, as we said before, we do lag slightly behind in these spaces, but I think that's where all the excitement lies, even at Goodwood, where it's everything about classic race cars, and there's a huge tech center, and it's very popular, and I think that's really what we need to start focusing on.
Well, I mean, I suppose one of the positive things about the Festival of Motoring in South Africa is it is much more attended than some other international motor shows. I mean, I don't want to knock them, but I went to the London Motor Show 2 or 3 months ago, and while it was a good show, and there was a lot of there were a lot of people attending, it wasn't nearly as attended as the Festival of Motoring in South Africa. And the other thing was there wasn't as much engaging activity as what you guys put on, and for me it shows that just that little strategy that you unpacked just now around we want to have a crossover between the Goodwood Festival of Speed and a traditional kind of park and sea motor show is definitely evident in what I can see versus even other international motor shows.
I think you raised a point earlier where we were speaking about dealerships, and you know, I think ultimately, everything still comes down to human contact.
Oh, yeah.
And I think the show provides that platform. People can talk, they can talk to one another, they can engage. And yes, social media and all these platforms where you can order cars online, yes, it's got a space in the world, but ultimately, everything only happens when two people talk to one another.
Exactly.
And I think that's really what Festival is about. And not just about new cars, people love to see the old cars. And it's all about, for us, about a memory or a touch point.
Yeah.
Last year we had a Ford Cortina 3-liter GLE. It was one of the most popular cars at the show.
I remember those cars.
And you know, you see people going up to it and their eyes light up, and they have memories and stories.
Yeah.
And I don't know, for me especially, it's about passion.
Yes.
And then they tell their grandkid, geez, you know, my dad had one of those. I used to go to the driving in one of those. And it is ultimately still about people's feelings and passions.
Absolutely is. I mean, you're speaking my language, because, you know, the business that we're in, we live in the technology world and in the media world. But at the end of the day, nobody can build a machine that has that human emotion, that has that human part to it. And people are, you know, pack animals. We want to interact. We want to engage with each other, and you can't do that through a screen. So, you know, if you had to juxtapose Auto Trader's visitation and the people coming to the Festival of Motoring, you know, it's like having a stadium full of people and getting a chance to show them what South Africa is about. That's effectively what it is. Because how many people are in the big stadium out in the south of Joburg?
FNB
Stadium is what, 85,000 people?
Yeah, odd.
Okay, so imagine a stadium full of people, and all of those people descending on Kailami. Then you get the scale of what 70,000 people look like.
Correct, but I think the difference is when you're in a stadium, you're only engaging with the people around you.
Correct.
Yeah. I think whenever you put 70,000 people, or not in one day, at Kailami, everyone's engaging with one another. Yes. It's a much more engaging atmosphere than the stadium atmosphere. Yeah. So I think that for us is the key.
But I mean, if I just take a step back and think about the scale of that stadium and how many people are going to pass through Kailami this weekend, it's going to be an amazing show, in my opinion. So Autotrader is hosting the Tech Talks again this year with some exciting topics on the motoring industry that we've crafted in conjunction with Misa Frankfurt. Why should motoring enthusiasts come to them, and why are these topics this year important? Well, it's intertwined with everything that the Festival of Motoring represents, which is, where is the future? What does the future hold? What does technology hold? How do we start to think about autonomous driving technology in vehicles, maybe even data? And so come and have a look and listen to our Tech Talks, and then I don't know how true it is that the Stigger's going to be there.
Yes, I hear so too. yes, he's going to be there on Sunday.
Okay.
It's the real Stig, apparently.
The real one.
Are they fakes?
The African Stig. Or like
there is a couple
Stig's
from
African cousin.
I think there's a few on the East Rand. No, it is. The Stig will be there on Sunday, and he will be taking some guests around the track.
Okay.
In an OEM car. And exciting. I don't know how engaging he'll be, but he will be there.
Okay, the real Stig. The real Stig is going to be there. We now, you heard it here first. He's definitely going to be at the Festival of Motoring. So thank you, Dennis. Appreciate you coming and spending time with us. But we're looking really forward to the show.
Can I just say, I had my family there last year, and for the last 3 or 4 months, my two kids have been pestering me. When is the show? When is the show? When is the show? Because they're actually looking forward to attending again this year.
Yeah.
Because they had so much fun last year with all the stuff that the OEMs put out, specifically aimed at kids. It's just, I can only say, if you're looking for a weekend out with the family, go there. This. It's going to be awesome.
I mean, just finally, what are some of the activations for kids at the show?
Well, can I mention brands?
Go ahead.
Puma Energy, one of our sponsors, is creating a huge kiddies area.
Okay.
They actually have a little bicycles and cars where you actually drive into a service station. They give you tokens, you can pay, you can go into a little shop. So they're trying to educate kids in terms of, you know, the processes with motor vehicles. Volkswagen always do a lot. They've put a massive Ferris wheel up at Kailami. And I think
is this the first time this Ferris wheel is going to be up?
It is the first time.
Wow.
It's huge. It's almost like a, you know, Goodwood always has their structure every year.
Yeah.
And it's always been one of our objectives to have some iconic
a draw card.
Yeah, some iconic monument almost to the show, and this year that's definitely it. And Volkswagen's done a great job in doing it. I think the other thing, if you don't mind me just mentioning, we've sold a lot of VIP experience tickets, which is hot laps in various Mercedes, BMWs, Roush, Mustangs.
Ooh.
But people can still get to go in cars around the circuit. I think that's a key message.
Well, I mean, that's been a standard since day one, right? I mean,
correct.
one of the key features that you guys have instilled in that crossover between Goodwood Festival of Speed and a traditional motoring show is people can come and go. Have a drive in a car. They drive it themselves, right?
Not around the track.
No. So you can go as a passenger in a car and experience that car on Kailami track. And how many people can say that they've driven around Kailami?
Yeah, I think it's the traditional Joburg International Motor Show used to be every 2 years.
Yeah.
We've changed this to a yearly event.
But that used to be at
Nasrec. Yeah, correct.
The track there.
And obviously not all the OEMs come every year.
Yeah.
Some of them are still in a 2 year cycle. So this year there'll be different cars to drive as there potentially were last year. But there'll always be an experience on a track. Lovely. And I think that's key.
It's a key differentiator with what Correct. You try to build and then bolt it on other stuff. And so if you want your kids to have an amazing 4 days, come to the Festival of Motoring this week. Starts
first public day is Thursday. Thursday to Sunday.
Doors open at?
Early. 8, okay. 9 come o'clock. Come early because
the queues are going to be long.
Yeah. and Kalami's parking is tight.
Make as if you're buying an iPhone.
Sleep overnight.
Appreciate that, Dennis. And our next segment is with one dealer, and it is called Grid Talk. And I read that Red Bull is dropping Pierre Gasly. Now, I'm not surprised, to be honest.
It's finally that time of the season. It's silly season. And Red Bull is notorious for this. They're the swap shop, notoriously known as being the swap shop, because this is what they do.
Well, they won a couple of world champions, right?
Yeah. But imagine being a driver and on your contract, you know that, hey, if you don't perform, we're going to put the foot off the Gasly. And that's what happened with Pierre Gasly.
Foot off the Gasly.
And that's exactly what happened. You know, he had 63 points and Max is 181. What's going to happen when next year you want to be the number one constructor?
Well, let's be honest. Since Ricciardo left that team, my wife's going to be happy about this statement. Since Ricciardo left that team, Red Bull has not been doing as well.
No, they haven't.
Let's call a spade a flipping spade.
Yeah.
They haven't been doing as well. And I put it down to Gasly's inability, or should I say lack of experience, / he shouldn't be in that car. He should be in a McLaren or...
Yeah, you said experience, but now I'm at a point where I'm actually tired of this. You know, we have Max, who... I don't think he did F2. He went straight from F3 straight into a Formula One car.
He's one of the future world champions. You know? Definitely.
But Charles also doing reasonably well.
Yeah. They should have hung on to Ricciardo.
They should have.
And Ricciardo should have just bit the bullet and said, well, Verstappen is as good as me or even maybe better, but I'm in a winning car. Where is he sitting now?
He's sitting at Renault.
Exactly, Renault. Where? In the back market.
In the gravel pits with a broken engine.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. When he was with Red Bull, his engine was broken quite often too. So I wonder where the problem lies.
Yeah, it's twofold,
guys. Behind the steering wheel.
Yeah, I always say a picnic problem. Problem in chain, not in computer. Same thing with the Formula One guy.
Yeah, no, he's struggling there as well. I think he's 11th currently on the grid. And it's kind of sad because he was flagged to be another great.
Yes.
And, you know, you have drivers every few years who make huge decisions. A great example was when Hamilton left McLaren. People were like, why? Mercedes is nowhere. But sometimes you take a risk and it pays off. And right now for Danny, it's
well,
not there.
For me, Gasly wasn't a calculated risk.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know the history of the guy's abilities or wins, but at this rate, he's in one of the top cars, and he can't even come close to Verstappen. Yeah. At least Ricciardo was on Verstappen's tail.
Yeah.
You know, breaking the car in the process, but he was on Verstappen's tail. Yeah.
He was competitive, and that's the problem. If you want to win championships, not drivers' championships, but constructors' championships, you have to work as a team, and both of you need to be competitive. We talk about Valtteri, and we're like, oh, he's not there, but he's there if you look at the fact that he's there for the team.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. Toto Wolff said that he wants a soft landing for Bottas. Well, I mean, we're in a Formula One car, not in a freaking aeroplane, yeah?
Yeah.
So yeah, what does soft landing mean?
So this is kind of a historic problem with team principals making promises to development drivers. Mm. Ocon is a brilliant driver. If a driver leaves for a year, you kind of forget, but he made such an impression, the fact that he left on the basis of somebody's father buying a team and now he has to leave his seat. And then on the other hand, Mercedes, your father team, is saying, hey, you know, if you stick around and our other number two driver is not there, you might...
Who's replacing Bottas?
Esteban Ocon. Maybe. Potentially.
Potentially,
but
maybe.
But next season, not next season.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's got to put Bottas' head in the right place, I'm sure.
And it will. We saw him at the beginning of the season. He's still here. And he's not going to just hand his seat over.
Well, I mean, I suppose somebody's got... Bottas has got two options here. One...
Perform or leave.
Perform.
Yeah.
And show them, oh, you're making a freaking mistake. And then leave anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I don't think...
Or the other alternative is get all down in the dumps and start losing races and then lose your future too. So I think Bottas is part of the former. Yeah. I think he's a bit of a quiet fighter, to be honest.
No, he's going to fight for that seat. And look, we're almost at the second... second half of the season, and all these changes that are happening now, my God, it's going to be insane. We're about to see one of the best second halves of any season. I think
you're spot on. I think
well,
you're absolutely spot on.
The next race is one of my favorite tracks in the world.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We're all anticipating which track it is.
Spa.
And Belgium. Well, yeah. Let's see how Spa goes. But how true, Wandile, is the rumor that Christian Horner, he denies it, has been approached by Mercedes for Verstappen.
Can we believe anything that Christian Horner says anymore?
What?
I mean, he said we're not going to have a mid-season swap of drivers. And
he's a liar.
Two days later, liar. Not even a week.
Do you think he plays the PR?
He plays everyone. He plays fans.
That's a fake out pit stop right there.
You know what? The team that has the fake out pit stops are Mercedes Benz. Let's be honest.
Heavy.
They if they see Ferrari even sniffing at a pit stop, those oaks will be out in the pit running with tires. And then it's like, we were going to bring him in. We're not going to bring him in anymore.
Yeah, no, I don't know. But to answer your question, have Mercedes approached Red Bull for Max? I hope they have. To be honest, I hope they have. I hope they haven't, because if Max moves to Mercedes Benz, why are we doing this then? Why are we watching the sport that we love for races and people fighting and wheel to wheel action? Because if he leaves, it'll be sad. But I want to see that boy win a championship. I want to see him fight for
next year.
Yeah, but that's what he said last year.
Well, they have a new engine that's doing really well. So
well, no, that engine's doing well. I mean, what is in it now? Honda. Honda's in it. And if you remember back in, I mean, when I started watching Formula One, 15 years ago, maybe longer, Honda did well. Honda did really, really well. And I'm glad to see that that Honda's back and actually helping to win races. So, another rumor. While we're in this break. Now, funny thing is, people shouldn't go on breaks, because then the politics starts.
Yeah.
Because like this next rumor, I'm hoping it's true, but I'm hoping he comes back to the right team, and that is Alonso returns.
Yeah.
Highly unlikely. He's gotten too fat. He can't get into the seat anymore. He's
Alonso, not Mansell, man.
No, I'm talking about Alonso. No, he's. I think he's. There's a lot of rumors surrounding that guy. There was talk about him.
I don't think he's out.
There was talk about him going to Dakar. There's talk about him. He bombed out at Indy. He's still chasing his triple.
You know
what?
He should. Mercedes-Benz.
You think so?
I reckon he should. Either Gasly's spot, or he should be in one of the top three cars.
Definitely
be in the top three cars.
Put him in a McLaren.
I don't care how old he is. That guy can drive.
My only issue with that, what you just said now, is he has a great relationship with, what's his name, Zach Brown from McLaren. And so much so that it's kind of deviating from him being in one of these top three teams.
Yeah, but he mustn't. I mean, like, really, put Gasly in a McLaren. Come on.
Put Alonso in the Red Bull.
Yeah, I mean, even Hamilton said that he would make a good teammate. Now, I don't know whether Hamilton's saying that because he doesn't want, he thinks that is not competition. But even Hamilton said, we got along well.
Yeah. Alonso is doing Dakar this year with Gazoo Racing, and he is back in Formula One.
He's what do you mean back in Formula One?
You will be back in Formula One.
Dennis just told us something that we don't know. Dennis knows something that we don't. Are you at liberty to say?
No, unfortunately not. Oh,
damn. When we end the show, I'm coming to talk to you.
You'll have to attend the Festival of Motoring to find out.
You can ask the stick.
Ask the stick. And what's happening in Ferrari? It seems quiet. Are there no rumors? I mean, usually Ferrari has rumors like.
Nothing yet. I mean, both of their drivers have been signed for another year, so we shouldn't be expecting anything there. Only time where Ferrari does anything shocking is when a driver is doing poorly. And right now, let me ask you, do you think any of your two drivers are?
My two drivers?
Yeah.
You know what? My opinion is Vettel needs a life coach. That's just, if he was sitting in front of me right now, I'd say to him, China, get a life coach. Yeah. Because what you need is some calming of that emotion of yours and focus. Mm. So that would be my honest advice personally to Vettel. I was disappointed to see Charles Leclerc's emotion in the last race. I was disappointed to see that because I thought that he was going to have the resolve of Hamilton. Mm. Now, I'm not a Hamilton fan, but that guy has his head in the right place. He doesn't have the best car, but he has his head in the right place. Mm. And oftentimes winning at anything is about having focus.
Definitely.
And, you know, that's not, if of course you're stupid, but is about having focus. So for me, Vettel needs some life coach to get his head in the game. And Leclerc mustn't think of himself as a world champion driver yet.
Yeah.
He needs to think of himself as finishing every single race.
Do you think that's the case? Or do you think he's
a
bit of ego there?
I don't know. I mean, I've only seen the emotion out of him once, so I could be absolutely wrong. Mm. But we'll watch his attitude as the year progresses. The more he wins, the more that arrogance may just show its head too early.
Yeah.
I mean, for Hamilton or for Vettel to show a little bit of confidence, I'm not going to say arrogance, to show a little bit of confidence. I mean, they've won four world championships. Yeah. Well, I mean, Hamilton now.
And five, yeah.
Five, eh? So they have the platform to do it. You can't take that away from them.
It is. It's just maturity. I mean, you look at Verstappen. 2 years ago, we were calling him Verkrashten and all sorts of horrible names.
Look at what he's done.
Mm. He's just matured.
He has. And you know what? I don't see as much emotion out of him anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. And the same thing will happen to Leclerc. As the older guys leave the teams and the number two drivers become the number one drivers, they mature. They develop that emotional fortitude and, you know, calming, you know, being able to manage.
That's how Hamilton started.
Mm. Yeah. It was also all over the place.
Yeah. And I think, you know, they have to have self-belief. Otherwise, they probably know we.
But they also need to remember that to finish first, you need to first finish.
You need to first finish. That's exactly
right. And on those wise words
exactly
from Martin.
Right. Right. Well, on to our next story. The W Series 2020 selection to start in September.
Yes. And I'm so excited about this.
Yeah, me as well, because our very own Tasman Pepper has been selected a second time, which is brilliant. The driver selection process is set for the grid for the second W Series season in 2020 and will get underway next month with the inaugural champion Jamie Chadwick guaranteed to return, which I was surprised by because I thought the winners or the top drivers would move on to another series.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem to be the case. So the three-day selection process will take place at the Almeria Circuit in southern Spain on September 16th to 18th. So we'll be watching that very closely. And the top 12 finishers from the 2019 championship, including Chadwick, runner-up Bietzka Fissa. I mean, I don't think that's South African, but Fissa.
Nederlands.
And Brand Hatch race winner Alice Powell have all won the option of guaranteeing a return to the series for the second year, where super license points will be on offer. So I think this is an important point to this W Series race, is that the first season there were no racing points. There were no super license points being issued, and this time super license points will be issued. So the lineup looks as follows. Position one was Jamie Chadwick with 110 points, two wins. Second position was Bietzka Fissa with 100 points and one win. And then, so that just proves to you, you can come second with one win. It's incredible. Alice Powell was in third position at 76 points and one win. And then Marta Garcia, Emma Kimilainen. Don't even know how to say half these names. But racing ahead, Tasman Pepper came 10th with 22 points and is guaranteed a drive and will be able to get super license points for the next series, which we are really excited about. Anything to add there, Wandile?
Well, I think you were just mentioning now you can come second 1 point. This series is extremely competitive.
Yeah.
And having the fact that Tasman's there is such a huge, huge advantage, and I think it's going to push like South African motorsports so much. I think we're all really like rooting for her, and she's going to be at the Festival of Motoring as well. So
correct.
If you want to go and speak to her, there's an opportunity to meet her. The top driver in SA, I think, is incredible.
Well, that's been an incredible show, gents. Thank you, Dennis, for joining us. We really appreciate it. We look forward to the show. Auto Trader will be, as usual, fully engaged and trying to help make a success out of the show. Thank you, Martin, for your 850 review. Yeah. Appreciate it. Have we got it still?
No, it's gone back. I'm just coming out of my depression now.
Quang, quang, quang.
He didn't even come show me because he probably knew what was going to happen. Lawrence, thanks for joining and your input as usual. Wandile, that was an amazing rundown of the rumor mill in the break of the grid talk. So until 2 weeks' time, see you all next week.
This is CliffCentral.com.